The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I am your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews for and about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be a part of the show. In our last four episodes, we talked with an IT service provider who opened his own computer store, learned how he did it, and what you need to consider before making that move from working out of your house to opening a storefront of your own. Today we'll talk with the owner of a computer store who recently expanded and moved his storefront to a new location. We'll learn how he did it and what he had to consider before he made the critical decision to invest in such an expansion. But first, let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. Unified communications, an area of IT consisting of email, audio, video, and web conferencing, and other IP-based communication and messaging technologies, is set to experience significant growth in the coming year, according to a study by CompTIA. The study, called Unified Communications and Collaboration Market Trends, claims large firms with 500 or more employees are more likely to increase spending on unified communications than small companies with less than 50 employees. According to CompTIA, of the 600 IT and business executives surveyed for the study, 49% expect their costs on unified communications, quote, will grow relatively faster than their overall IT budget for the next 12 months, unquote. The complete report is available to CompTIA members at www.comptia.org. Silicon Graphics Solutions and Intel plan to bring exascale computing to the IT industry. In a press release June 20th, SGI announced a partnership with Intel to create the next generation of supercomputers with the capability to deliver petaflop computing with Intel's MIC or Mini Integrated Core technology. You can read the press release at www.sgi.com or click on the link in the show notes in the RSS feed for this episode. Mozilla released Firefox 5 June 21st. Mozilla claims Firefox 5 includes over 1,000 improvements and performance enhancements and is the first browser to support the Do Not Track Privacy feature on multiple platforms. Firefox 5 is available for download at www.mozilla.com. And finally, the U.S. Federal Trade Commission cleared the way for Microsoft to purchase Skype. An early termination notice posted on the FTC website June 16th indicates the agency gave the go-ahead for the $8.5 billion acquisition of Skype by Microsoft. Following news of the approval, a number of Skype executives abruptly left the company, including the chief marketing officer and the general manager. I don't mind telling you, I'm just a wee bit concerned about this acquisition. I like Skype and use it to record interviews and calls for the show. We have a dedicated phone number for the Force Field, 407-278-5698, otherwise known as 407-CPU-JOY-8. This is our official Skype line, and we use it for nearly every episode of this show. It has served us well for nearly 5 years, and I count on it to do so for many, many more. Microsoft has a solid reputation for buying its way into a technology or market. Redmond has an old and rather annoying habit of competing in these markets by acquiring an already established product or service, retooling it, and slapping the Microsoft name on it. Unfortunately, Microsoft also has a reputation for doing an extreme makeover on the acquired product or entity in the process of this rebranding, often transforming it from a low-cost, high-value product to a very expensive one. Why am I worried? Because right now I can make and receive calls with Skype to help produce the force field without buying a new license every time I upgrade the software and without exorbitant calling fees. What will Skype be like 6 months from now? Or a year? Will I still be able to keep my number at a price I can afford? Or will it soon be just as cheap to have a landline? Or cheaper? Whatever happens, what really concerns me is the idea that, by the end of this year, if I have trouble with the force field call-in line, I will be calling Microsoft, the phone company. And that's the news in the force field. Usually we have a commercial break where we showcase a specific, personally approved sponsor. This week we're going to take a break from that and spend a minute or two getting to know the forcefield.net. Although it is the official home of the Force Field podcast, it is really much more. It's a web portal with news, blogs, resources, and reviews from inside the IT industry. There's the latest news releases from major tech companies, reviews of new products and services, blogs and discussions about trending topics in tech fields, and sources of information for learning the ins and outs of the IT industry. TheForceField.net also features the Force Field Forums, a community of techs who collaborate, support one another, and discuss the issues vital to their businesses. In addition, there are articles, books, videos, and access to free industry trade publications, such as periodicals, ebooks, and white papers, all there to help you learn more about the business of tech. Most of the resources inside the Force Field are accessible to members only. However, membership is free. To join, simply register at www.theforcefield.net. Join today and build your business inside the force field. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698, or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free. And you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. In our last four episodes of the Force Field, we talked with Pat Palmer, an IT professional who owns and operates The Computer Guy, a computer store located in Hampton, Iowa. In part one, we learned how he opened his store, how he made the decision to jump from a home office to an actual storefront, and the considerations he made in staffing it properly. We also discussed why a daily commitment to attendance and punctuality is vital to its success. In part two, we discussed the advantages of having a storefront, the disadvantages of having one, and important things to consider when renting or leasing the space to set it up. In part three, we learned how Pat utilized floor space in more than one way to maximize his investment, some of the costs involved in setting up the store, and how inventory management can make or break your bottom line. Today we'll talk with Parrish Reinl, a value-added reseller who owns a computer store in Niles, Michigan. Parrish not only opened a store, he expanded and moved it. Twice. We'll find out why he did it, how he did it, and what he had to consider before making the critical move to expand his operation, as we continue with part 5 of our 6-part series on opening a computer store. And we're talking with Parrish. Hi, Parrish. Welcome to the Force Field.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming back to be with us today. You've been on the Force Field before. In fact, in episode 33, where we discussed the pros and cons of being a MacGyver tech. But for those who are listening for the first time, why don't you just go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about yourself and your business?
Again, my name is Parrish, and I own Pathfinder Networks. We are a, I guess the best way to say it would be a more of a regional value-added reseller, and we also have a retail storefront. We do small business computer networking support. We're a small business specialist through Microsoft, so we do the small business server and Windows server for small businesses in our area. Probably go up to 50 workstation networks and on down. And then we also have the retail store where we do the residential work, repairs, sales of new and used computers. We do all of our custom builds in the store. If I have a network client that needs a new server and new PCs, we build them all ourselves. So we try to do a little bit of everything to a point. We try to cover the whole gamut of Windows side of things. As I mentioned, we don't do anything on-site for residential. And that's what we have the store for. We can fill that need in the store and just have the custom cleaning machines to us. That's kind of who we are.
And you've been doing this for quite a while now. How many years?
I've been in IT myself pretty much since out of high school. I was a electrical engineer is what my degree is in. It's been a good 20 years, and in the first part of that, I was as a W-2 working for other companies in engineering and information systems, and then I've had the business. We started the business in 1997, but it wasn't full-time until 2004. But since April of 2004 until now, it's been a full-time job.
Well, Parrish, when we had you on the Force Field last time, we were talking about how many techs manage both the business and the tech sides of their company as a one-man band, so to speak, and how tough it can be to do that. And you pretty much started off doing the same thing. Your business has grown quite a lot since then, since 1997. When you first started out, you were basically working out of your home, of course, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
When I went full time with the business in 2004, the first, from 97 to 2004, it was a part time. I was working full time as a W-2 for those years, so it was just, after hours. I only had probably 5 or 6 business clients at that time, so it was pretty much on the side just for extra income. And then so in 2004, I went full-time with it. And for the first, 5 or 6 months, it was out of my home. And then I saw that, the business was growing. And really to take it to the next level, we had to have a store. So that's when, towards the end of 2004 is when we opened up the store.
Mm-hmm. And when you first started your business, was that part of the overall game plan, the long-term plan, was to open a store, or was it just something? Was it something that you decided to do once you began to grow to a point where you felt that you needed to expand, or was it something that you always planned to do from the start?
It was really something I always planned to do because one of my first jobs was as a hardware store clerk. One of the first jobs I ever had as a teenager. So that gave me the retail exposure for about 4 years, and I really enjoyed that, interacting with the customers and just, having that. It was a small town, mom-and-pop hardware store, so it was just kind of an enjoyable thing to do. So when I started the business, I definitely had the intentions of someday having a computer store. So it was definitely the plans. There was just no set-in-stone plans for when it was going to happen. Like I said, once I saw that the full-time gig was going to work, that was definitely the next step we had to take, was to open a retail location.
Mm-hmm. I take it that it did pretty well, and then at some point you decided to expand the store.
Right. And when we first opened the store, it was a pretty small location. It was, I think it was only 600 square feet, so it was a really small office with a small retail. They had a couple office spaces in it, and then, you know, really small retail, probably a, you know, 200 square foot retail area. So it was pretty tiny as far as that goes. And, you know, for the first 6 months or so, it was pretty tough to make. I mean, we planned on that. I mean, we went into it having, when I say we, I've got a business partner. So that's, when I say we, that's what I'm talking about. We went into it knowing that we had to have some cash to the side to survive. I mean, we didn't go into it thinking that we were going to make a profit the first day. We, you know, we had planned out some downtime and time to grow the business, but it actually grew quicker than what we had anticipated. I thought it was going to be a good year, even 2 years before we could see, you know, real growth and, you know, capabilities expanding, and it was quicker than that. And the reason I had planned on, you know, more than a year or two of maybe a loss even in having the income to survive for that long is because of the W-2s I had before. One of them, I was a manager of the department, and we had started off a few businesses through the other W-2, and I had worked through the business plan phase. You know, we've got to do the financials and say, okay, you know, the first 3 years, here's what we expect to make, and then, you know, year four, we start to make a profit. So I was familiar with that concept. So, you know, using that knowledge I gained from there to start my own store was a big help, because there were no surprises. And if anything, the surprise was that it became profitable quicker than what we had thought.
So when you decided to first open your store and then later on to expand, it wasn't just a lark. I mean, it wasn't just the dream and you just jumped into it. You did some real planning. You had a real business plan there. You went over everything very carefully. You put in contingencies for slow periods and for a period of time where you would not be making any money. And pretty much you really did some homework before you jumped into it.
Right, absolutely. Because, you know, I knew that without that homework and that plan, it was going to be very difficult. You can't just jump into something and expect it to work without knowing what you're getting into. I mean, you've got to really have a plan and stick to it. And we made mistakes. I mean, you know, just because you have a plan doesn't mean you don't make mistakes. And it doesn't mean you have to stick to the plan no matter what. I mean, you can veer from it. You know, our plan at first when we opened was to become a Dish Network retailer, which we did that for quite a while. And we sold Dish Network and also to become a Nextel dealer as part of the store, because in our minds we were thinking that, you know, as a computer store by itself, you know, how difficult is that going to be to make a retail establishment work for computer retail?
Yeah.
We figured, okay, let's tie in some other products with that kind of go along with it, you know, with the Dish and the Wild. We were a Wild Blue dealer for a while. You know, all these things, we tried to have a reason to have more of a retailer draw customers in. And those have faded away, actually. The Nextel never worked because we just could never get the dealership going, which in the long run worked out good, because once we started seeing the numbers on what you can make on cell phones, it's a pretty bad. The financials just aren't there. I don't know how anybody can do it, to be honest, but what they do. Dish Network was pretty good for us, actually. It started off being, I was doing the installs, and again, that was because I was able to do the installs because we were still growing the business. I had time to do it, so that was kind of a sideline thing, but it was good money for the Dish, and it gained us customers on the PC side as well. And then along with Dish, I was Wild Blue certified and was going to install Wild Blue systems, but by the time that we got Wild Blue ramped up where we could sell it, we were starting to fade out of the Dish just because the retail computer side and the networking side picked up so much that we wanted to focus on the computer side and kind of get out of the other programs. But, you know, that was all, like I said, the business plan we had. We had all these, like I said, the Dish and Nextel in there, but we knew that, you know, business plan is just that. It's a kind of a guide. You can't look at it as a set in stone thing you got to do. You know, so we backed off of some of the things from the plan, and actually worked out better for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you at some point do some of your own hosting too, like email hosting or something like that?
Right. And actually, I still do that now. Our own for myself, I do our own website and email. Everything is on a server here at my home because I've got a high-speed connection, Comcast connection here at the house. So that was the first thing that we did. I've got some of the customers I do. We've got a GoDaddy reseller account that we do, you know, domain registration and domain hosting. It's not a big part of it. It's more of a convenience to our customers because it's one of those deals where if the customer is going to pay somebody to do it, why don't we do it ourselves? It's easy. You know, it's really not anything difficult to do, and it's just one more value that we can add to our business for the clients, more that we can take care of them for them.
And some can, and some can't. Those who can't can sign up as a reseller at GoDaddy and offer it through GoDaddy, pretty much. I mean,
right.
There are a couple of ways to actually go about doing it. Some people actually do pretty well doing that sort of thing.
Right.
Now, with all of this going on, obviously you weren't doing everything by yourself. You had a partner. I think you've hired one or two people as well.
Right. We've got to... At one point, we had two part-time techs, and they were actually, during the summer, they were both full-time for a while. One of them is my godson, and the other tech was my partner's son. So they were family members, but yet they were still employees, W-2 employees that we were taking withholding out. My partner's son has since then moved to New York, so he's no longer with the company, but my godson, when he's not in college, is still full-time. And, you know, I'm looking forward to him coming back next week for Thanksgiving just because of... we need the help. So when he's gone, it's, you know, we look at how we can hire someone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where I haven't taken that full leap yet because there's a lot of facets to hiring somebody. You can't just hire somebody and put them out in the field and have them do the job right.
Oh, yeah, that's a topic in and of itself right there.
Right, exactly. You can have a whole show just on that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, absolutely. Well, we may be covering that in a future episode as well. Now,
that'd be a good topic, actually. So.
We'll have to have you back on to cover that because obviously you have some real experience in that as well that can help other techs out looking to do the same thing. Now, you expanded once or twice. So how many times did you?
This is our second time actually, and it's been I've had the store open for 6 years now, and in that time period, we've moved twice. And the reason it's been twice is the leases we had before were both three-year leases. So the first store, we signed a three-year lease. And we, you know, our intentions were actually to stay at that spot. But it didn't take long before we realized that, you know, 600 square feet just wasn't going to cut it. It was, you know... within a year, we knew that, okay, we've got to have some more space. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, where we were at, we couldn't move to a new location while we had the lease. So the first 3 years, we were kind of stuck in that small store in a strip mall that was okay, but not the greatest. Mm-hmm. So once that lease was up, we got out and searched for areas, you know, stores and locations, you know, in our same area, in the same street and everything where we could move to. We were there for the second store for 3 years. That was the second store was a little over 900 square feet, and it was a pretty much. It was an empty space, but it was a space that was used as a agricultural spray company office. It was old paneling and offices, so we had to do a lot of work as far as tearing down walls and drywall and just pretty much remodel the whole store mm-hmm. to make it what we wanted. And on that second move, we did all the work ourselves because we were still trying to save as much money as possible because we're pretty conservative in what we spend, so we didn't want to go in debt. We've never been in debt, and that's one thing I don't ever want to do.
That's a sign of a strong company right there.
Right, exactly. And it's been tough. I mean, it would be easy to go into debt and have people come in, hire contractors to remodel things for you and all that, but then... that's tough. I mean, you've got to really hammer the business to make it work to pay those debts off, and that's just not what we want to do. My personal life's the same way. I mean, I kind of take my personal financial responsibility right to the business, and my partner and I have the same mentality with that, where you know, we only spend money that we need to spend. So that was the second store, though. We were there, you know, our lease ran out in October of this year at our second location, and our plans were to stay at that spot. We had no intention of moving at all, but as far as our due diligence goes, as far as, you know, the lease renewal, we knew that we had to research the going rate in the area just as part of the negotiation process, because our landlord wanted to increase the, you know, the lease, the renewal rates, and So we, as we started looking at the new rates, we saw that, wow, it's come really down because, you know, the economy's slower. So a lot of the landlords are kind of begging people to take their spots. So we came across one location, and actually it's one of our customers even, that owns a strip mall, and we were talking to him, just trying to feel him out what he was charging, because he's got one of the nicest locations and retail spots in the city of Niles where we're at. So we really had no intention of even being able to afford his at all. But it turned out that his was, the rate he gave us came in less than what, quite a bit less than what our new landlord, what our current landlord was going to charge us for the new lease. Wow, and even when he came back with it, and even when we negotiated a lower rate, because we told our landlord at the store where we were at that current time that, you know, we weren't going to accept that new rate because of the economy, and so he came back with another offer, which was quite a bit less, but it still wasn't as cheap as the new location that we saw. So it was kind of a last-minute deal. I mean, we were, you know, we signed the, it was in September that we started looking at rates, and by the end of the month, we were already moved out and ready to move in the new store. I mean, it was within a month of not knowing we're going to move to all of a sudden we're moving. So it was pretty quick turnaround, but we couldn't turn it down because we had doubled our space from a little over 900 square feet to a little over 1,700 square feet for pretty much the same rent every month.
Well, so you got a better deal cheaper. I mean, that, you know, that's a tough deal to pass up.
It is. It would have been irresponsible to pass it up. The footage, the, you know, price per foot was almost half of what we were paying at the other location, and it's just a better spot. I mean, if anyone knows our locations, the old one we had was good, too. It was on the busiest road in Niles. The highway we're on is the road that goes between Niles and Southern Indiana, where Notre Dame is on it and all the, you know, the big hotels. And it's a really busy road. It's one of the busiest roads in the state of Michigan as far as commercial roads go. And the new location is even better. I mean, it's on the same street, about a half mile down from where we were at, but there's a Lowe's across the street from us, a Walmart across the street. There's a hotel being built right behind us, a hotel, Holiday Inn Express. There's that restaurant next to us. So everything was great about it. It was kind of a dream come true that we could even get this spot. And it gave us the retail we needed. I mean, even the 900 square feet store that we were in was working for us. But at the time that we had the two employees working for us at the same time, there was no space. The techs were cramped, and we were working at cubicles, my business partner and I, and it was just everybody's kind of walking all over each other. The retail was okay because it was, most of that space was for retail, but the new store is just miles above what we had. The retail space is double what we had in the last store, and then we've got individual offices and individual tech space that's separate from all the other areas. So it's really, it's kind of a dream come true. Like I said, when I go there to work, it's like, wow, this is our place. And it makes you enthusiastic about the business when you walk into a place that you feel good about, and it looks nice, and, you know, makes you feel good about your business, which helps the business overall because you're more positive about it.
Yeah, it's part of your branding too. I mean, you've got a nice big store and a nice layout, and you know, it's got your name on it. That adds to the whole branding aspect of it. If you have a bigger store and it looks like it's doing really well, people have a tendency to want to gravitate towards that, as opposed to maybe some other stores that Pat Palmer and I were talking about that in an earlier episode, where, you know, one of the issues with some of the small shops revolved around the punctuality of the techs to actually be at the store. You know, you'd have a little small shop that was kind of a hole in the wall, so to speak, and the tech would hardly ever be there. And it gave an impression that the tech was not that serious about the business, or the business was not that stable, or who knows if they were actually still in business or not.
Right.
And that can be a big turnoff for some people, for some users.
Right. That's exactly right. We've got a store in Niles that we compete with that is exactly that, which I don't know how they're still there, but they are. But we get customers that come into our store, and, you know, they see ours as being a, you know, we've got hours posted on the door, and we keep those hours. And that's, you know, as you mentioned, that's critical for it, not just for a computer store, but for any kind of retail establishment. You know, when you have hours posted, you have to be there at those hours. Customers, you know, if they make a trip, they're 10 miles away and they make a trip to your store and your clothes, they're not going to be happy about it, and they're probably not going to come back.
Especially if they're lugging around a computer or two.
A computer, right, yeah. Yeah, if they took the effort to disconnect it and everything to bring it.
Yeah.
But it's not only the punctuality of the, for being there when you say you're going to be there, it's just how the store looks even. Some of our competitors are just, like you said, kind of a hole in the wall where you're, we've had customers come in and say that they didn't want to leave their computers there. They were not sure if the computer was going to still be there when they came back, kind of a thing. And that's legitimate. I mean, as a consumer myself, I shy away from stores that look run down and not maintained well. Empty parking lots, it makes you feel that, okay, if the business isn't doing well, there might be a reason that it's not doing well.
Yeah, in fact, one of my competitors actually did that very thing. He actually had a larger store than I did, but when you walked into it, it was basically empty. There wasn't much going on. And one day they closed their doors. They actually, as I recall, they got nailed for selling pirated Windows software. And
right.
He had a tendency to close his doors and then open up somewhere else a couple months later and with a new name and doing the same old thing. But that's what he did. He closed his doors one day. He had a number of computers that he was working on for other clients. And he just closed his doors, took off with the computers. And I had the next thing I knew, I had his customers walking into my door saying, "Hey, you know what happened to this guy down the street? He's got my computer. How do I get in touch with him?" I'm like, "I don't
know." Right.
And,
exactly.
And they didn't get him back either.
Right. And I've heard of that, actually. You're not the only one that I've heard say that, which is just kind of mind-boggling to me because, my personal ethics, not alone the business ethics, but personal ethics, I couldn't do that to anyone. My word is my name. I mean, I do what I say I'm gonna do. I can't believe that there's people that do otherwise, but they're out there. I guess it's kind of hard to picture that, I guess.
Yeah, and your store reflects that, the overall appearance of your store, everything in the store. It's all part of your persona, of who you are and what your business actually is and represents. So overall,
right.
The look and feel of a store is just as important as where it is and what's in it.
Absolutely.
In our next episode, we'll conclude our discussion with Parrish and learn more about how he expanded and moved his store. We'll discuss the nuts and bolts of making the move, some of the issues he had to resolve to keep the move in budget and on schedule, and where he plans to take his store in the future, as we conclude with part 6 of our 6-part series on opening a computer store. Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening. My kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May The Force Field be with you.